Okay. We're beginning chapter 10 again. So, in this chapter, he's going... I just got to hang up my book. In this chapter, he's going to discuss...
Sweet.
The different levels in tzaddik, which are mentioned in chapter 1. So he says, "Hini kasha adam magber nafsho lekis." When a person causes his godly soul to dominate, the milcham kol kach, and he wages such a war, im habahemis, with his animal soul, ad shemegarsh imibar harasha ba mechalasmali, until he totally and completely drives away the evil which is in his left ventricle, which in his heart, which was mentioned in chapter 9, that the animal soul rests in the left side of the heart. As it says, and you will drive out the evil from your midst. But he hasn't converted the evil to be good. This person is called a tzaddik who's not complete, or a tzaddik who's got some bad to him.
Yeah, we don't have to worry about being this type of person, right?
No, we're still working on trying to make Rush of a Tovlo, which we'll talk about in the next chapter.
Good, excellent. Yeah, because I was already beginning to deciding whether I had to check out or not.
Yeah, okay. I know. That means to say, sheyesh ba adayim ma'at mazer ra b'chol esmol. It means, what's a tzaddik v'ralo? She mentions in the first chapter that there are three grades of people. Was a tzaddik, a beinoni, and a rasha. And tzaddik and rasha are divided into two categories, incomplete and complete tzaddik and rasha. So he's saying here that an incomplete tzaddik is, this is different than a beinoni. It's not that he just does a little bit of sins, because that would make him a rasha, as is talked about in the first perek. But he has evil, but it's total complete control over it, such that it doesn't give him any problems. It's just that it is still there. Whereas a tzaddik gomer, he's going to say, has absolutely no evil in him whatsoever. But the only thing is that the evil which is in him is subjugated and nullified to the good, machmas miyuta, because of its insignificance. Therefore, it appears to them as though it's completely gone, legamri. Avol be'emes, but in truth, ilachalach v'halach le'legamri kol harashabai, if it would be that the evil would totally leave from him, hayinahapich l'tayv mamish, then it would have been converted to good, absolutely. So this is probably the more difficult type of person to understand as to what this is.
Yeah, because a person on such a level, how would he fool himself into thinking it's gone, you know? You understand what I'm saying?
It never bothers him.
Right.
Okay, but he's going to say later on, the Beinoni, the average guy, has got a war going on constantly. He's constantly vigilant. No, I'm not going to think that. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to say that.
Right.
This person's running on autopilot.
Yeah.
Okay. And he's going to say, well, anybody who's going to judge themselves as to what they're on, probably isn't on that level.
Probably isn't on, yes, exactly.
Correct. So you're not going to have a guy patting himself on the back and say, you know what, I think I'm a tzaddik v'ralo. Even Rava, when Rava was talking, he didn't say, well, by the way, we're talking about tzaddikim, and Roshoyim, and Rava was the leader of the generation. He didn't say, oh, for example, I'm an incomplete tzaddik.
Yeah, right.
He said, I'm a beinoni.
Yeah.
So, because the one thing for sure we know about a person, if they say they're a tzaddik, is they're not.
They're not, yeah.
Not probably. They are not.
Yeah.
Okay? Because how is a person supposed to know? Because, listen, you know, some people have all kinds of desires.
But what about the issue of a man has to be totally honest with himself? And if he were in a situation where it was required that he be honest, if he was, could he say so?
There's a story with the Chayes of Lublin.
Yeah.
When he was a very young man, when he became involved with Chassidus.
Right.
Okay, the Chais of Lublin was such a person that he really didn't live in this world.
Yeah, okay.
It says when he first came to Mizrich to learn with the Mizrich Magid.
Yeah.
So they were, the Mizrich Magid had Yurtzeit that day.
Right.
And they needed a tenth.
Right.
So they went and they found him. And the Mizrich Magid said they needed just, they were holding by Enkelakenu.
Right.
They're at the end of davening, the tenth man walked out.
Yeah.
But he needed to say Kaddish.
Right.
So they brought him in. He was 17 years old.
Yeah.
So the Mizrich Magid said, go find somebody else. He's a Batlin. So Batlin means usually just like a nothing, a nebbish or whatever, you know. It's just,
yeah.
So that's what the connotation is. They went looking and they said they couldn't find anybody. So he says, okay, we'll start with him. The Mizrich Magid said, Ein Kelokeinu, and he fainted.
Yeah.
And the Mizrich Magid turned around and said, I told you he's a Batlin. I said Ein Kelokeinu, and he became Batl. You know, that was the type of person that the Chais of Lublin was.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Okay, so now the when he came to Lublin, he was still a very young man.
Yeah,
and in Lublin was a very big city. Lublin's not no small town. It's not
no
a
burg. Huh?
Yeah, it's a big city. It's right on the Polish Polish-German border.
Yeah.
Okay, when the transports were coming out from World War II, they were going through Lemberg.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And there was this rabbi, he was a Misnagdish rabbi, much older, who had been there for a long time.
Yeah.
And he just couldn't understand, why is this young kid getting crowds?
Right.
He announced that the rabbi will now give a lecture. A couple of people show up. He gives a Shabbos drush, the place is packed.
Right.
So he calls the Chais of Lublin to come for a meeting in his place, and he comes and he says, I don't understand it. It says you don't know a whole lot, you're not very well learned, and you're a very young guy, and why is it that people come to you? And he said, I don't tell them to come to me. So he said, the rabbi said to the Chaiser, so this is what you do. Next Shabbos, when you give your drasha, just say, I am not worthy of giving a drasha, go home. And walk off the beam. We'll see what happens. So that's what he did. The next week, the place was packed even more.
Of course.
Okay?
Yeah.
So a person who is claiming, so you're talking about being honest with yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think of, there was an instance.
There's an instance once when the Rebbe was being asked, and I don't remember what under what circumstance.
Yeah.
But he was being asked by a lawyer. When the Rebbe says, the Rebbe used to use the expression the Sidereinu, which means the prince of the generation or the leader of the generation. So under the circumstances, so the Rebbe was asked, when the Rebbe says, Nasi, or usually it was like referring, he would say, my shver Nasi Derenu, my father-in-law,
right.
the leader of the generation. That's the way it sounds.
Right, right.
So he asked them, when you say Nasi Derenu, when you say the leader of the generation,
yeah.
Who do you mean? So it says the Rebbe put his head down on his hand like this and thought for a while and then went like this. And that's all he could muster.
Wow. Okay.
So, I mean, so when you're talking about fooling yourself, Moshe didn't fool himself.
Right.
Okay, Moshe, it says, was the most humblest of all people.
Sure, of course.
Korach comes and says, why have you picked yourself up over the rest of the people?
Sure.
So what did Moshe do? He fell down on his face.
Right.
And it said, please Hashem, don't listen to him.
Yeah.
Okay, just forget about him. Just, you know, the whole thing should, you know, don't listen to his claims, the whole business of it. This is why is he folding down on his face? The author explains, because he's thinking to himself, maybe he's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe Korach's right. Maybe I put myself in a position usurping authority and power.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm doing the wrong thing.
I
But then after China checked it out a little bit, said, no, this is Korach.
Yeah, yeah.
Korach's the yold. He's the one with the problem, not me.
Right, right. Hey. an honest self-analysis and then an honest analysis.
Right, but you're not going to make a public declaration.
No,
I check myself out, and I think you know.
No, yeah, no.
I'm a tzaddik. You can't do that.
No. But yeah.
And if you were to stand up and say, "Listen, I made a kivawit. I made an honest soul-searching account, and I checked through my deeds, and I have come up with the conclusion that I am a bainini." And you made such a public declaration, you know what would happen?
I hope they'd stone me.
They would. they would just laugh.
Yeah, for hours and weeks.
They would just say, we'd say, you know, Akiva, I think he's gone off the deep end or something.
There's no I think.
He's, you know, yeah. it's a Rahmanis on his kids,
yeah,
you know, doing such a stupid thing, you know.
Yeah,
it's just like, you know.
No.
You know, I can imagine a person dreaming that they're making an announcement in shul that they're a bainini should be on the same level as standing out and having a dream where you're standing outside in your underwear.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, it's just
about to fly.
Yeah, it's just like it's not
dream.
Gone now.
Yeah,
so why can't a person say that I am a tzaddik? You know, a tzaddik is going to define over here as a person who has no desire for mundane pleasures,
right?
Because not everybody, or I should say it this way, nobody has a taiva, a desire, for every mundane pleasure. I cannot understand.
I assume that's right.
I cannot understand how anybody would get any kind of enjoyment out of smoking a cigar. It makes absolutely, I've tried it, I have my balabatan, these guys, they come, they, you know. Listen,
yeah, you tried it? I never even would try it. It didn't make sense.
Here, they take this thing that's as long as my forearm.
Yeah.
And it's like sticking a pipe in my mouth, you know. And we're talking, you know, and it feels like I'm, you know, whatever. And they do the whole thing, they have this whole cutting ceremony and all sticking a thing over here with a, you can able to suck on the thing. And they light the thing up and it says, you just sit back, you relax. It's like refreshing, it feels so good. And I'll tell you, I've done it twice just because this guy said to me, this is one of the best cigars you're ever going to get. These things cost like, you know, a half a week's salary, some of these things. Mm. You know, here, this is absolutely the best. You could smoke this thing for 3 hours, okay? And then afterwards, I would probably throw up and lose my inside.
Yeah, for the
I have no idea.
Barf up a lung.
Yeah, how anybody can enjoy smoking a cigar. It's just, listen, Cigar Aficionado is one of the most read magazines in America. It's costs a fortune, and the cigar people in the industry,
and
the whole business,
the whole big deal.
People love it.
Yeah,
you know.
So no, I'm sorry, can't go there.
Not so. I could say, listen, I must be a tzaddik because I really find smoking cigars is disgusting. So since I find that this physical pleasure is disgusting,
I agree. You're a tzaddik.
I must be a tzaddik.
I agree. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
Like my agreement is. My agreement is worth
thank you for the public endorsement there.
Yeah. Good for you.
Okay. I'll be the Rebbe. You be the. You be the public endorsement.
Yeah, there you go.
The Gabbai.
That's it.
Yes.
That's it. You got it. Mm-hmm.
So you know, so a person can't make that assessment because you know who knows what this person's pleasure is, and you can't make it on that. You can't make that assumption on another individual either.
No, can't. No.
You know, you see this person who does this kind of, you know, very acts in a very pious manner.
Yeah.
So who's to say what's going on inside?
Exactly.
The whole thing could be a show, and vice versa.
And vice versa.
Who's it with? Oh, I don't remember which rabbi it was. A rabbi came to visit the Mezitra Magid, who was a contemporary of the Mezitra Magid. He was a student, a fellow student of the Baal Shem Tov.
Right.
I don't think it was Yaakov Yosef Palnoyer. I don't think it was Pinchas Horowitz. I don't remember who it was.
Who was the fellow who was the janitor in the theater?
No idea.
Who was it? Anyway, go ahead. You were telling us.
No idea. I vaguely remember such a story, but I'm sure
they sent. He was sent a sefer for an approbation, and
Yeah, I vaguely remember such a story, and they didn't know who he was since he was just like he was a janitor, like why?
Yeah, yeah. How in the world could?
I remember vaguely such a story.
Yeah, anyway,
but anyway, so this guy shows up, okay, and the Hasidim were flabbergasted.
Yeah.
Okay. He walks up to the Mezuzah Magid is like the Rebbe of Hasidus. Mm. Okay, so he doesn't have a gartel on.
Yeah.
He's got his kippata open. He's smoking a pipe. He's got a real fancy silver cane. The guy's wearing gold shoes.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Guy's wearing gold shoes.
Gold shoes, yes.
So, after he left, you know, he looks at this guy's really pompous.
Oh.
Okay? This story is in support of Hasidim someplace, in the Tales of the Hasidim.
Oh.
And after he left, so they asked him, and he said, well, in actuality, it's probably on the verse that the man Moses was very humble. It's probably where he breaks his stories up according to verses.
Yeah.
He says he's very humble. And he doesn't want anybody to know just how humble he is, so he hides his humility where no one would think of looking at it, in arrogance.
Interesting.
And he said...
That's an interesting piece.
You noticed that he was wearing gold slippers, but you didn't notice that they didn't have any soles on the bottom of them.
There you go, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Right. So we can't. It's not fair to judge anybody else, either good or bad. Mind your own business.
Either way.
Mind your business. You know.
Yeah.
Sorry. So the tzaddik, he says, if it would be that he would completely have driven it away, he'd be in total complete control, and there would be nothing but good in him. We can explain this as follows. Kehini a tzaddik gomer. We're talking about a totally righteous person. That he's totally converted the evil to good.
Yeah.
He has converted his Yetzahara to a Yetzer Tov. Tzaddikim usually have this thing about not eating.
Right.
Some of them have been actually quite corpulent. Mm. But they still have this thing about not really, you know, getting into the food business. They're not into it. They usually don't sleep a whole lot.
Yeah.
You know, the famous story with Shmuel Munkus, when he came to check out the Alter Rebbe. Shmuel Munkus himself was an erudite scholar, could have been a Rebbe himself, but he heard about the Alter Rebbe, the author of the Tanya. And he said, he went to go visit him. When is he going to go visit him? He specifically said, I'm going to go visit him at 2 o'clock in the morning. Because if he really is a Rebbe, he's not going to be sleeping. You know, what kind of Rebbe is sleeping at 2 o'clock in the morning?
Hello.
You know, and somebody once asked the Friedrich Rebbe a question when he was in America. Yeah. And he said, such a question you have to direct towards my son-in-law. So the guy asked the Friedrich Rebbe, when can I talk to him? He's got two jobs, he's got a life. At that time, the Rebbe was working 8 hours a day in the Brooklyn Naval Yard.
Yeah.
He was working 8 hours a day running corporate Lubavitch, and 8 hours a day for everything else. And the travel time to the Naval Yard came out of the 8 hours of everything else.
Right.
So he said, the best time to reach him is at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
Because either he is just waking up, or he hasn't gone to bed yet. Would be the best time to reach him. So tzaddikim, they're just not into the physical things of this world.
Right.
You know, there was a Rebbe who was older than the Rebbe by, I think, 7 years.
Mm.
He passed away when he passed away. He was 100.
Yeah.
The Rebbe was 92. He passed away in the following year, I think. It was called the Bluzh of a Rebbe. I don't know if you ever heard of the Rebbe of Bluzhev. Okay. So he was a little guy, and he came to the Rebbe for dollars, and he told the Rebbe that he feels weak, physically weak. And the Rebbe told him he has to eat more. The Rebbe yelled at him. He says, you know, this guy used to fast from Shabbos to Shabbos.
Right.
He says, no, you need to eat. And he said, what can I do? It's a tut mevei d'essen. He says, it bothers me to eat. It's just like such a hassle. this eating stuff. I got to eat. So he said, no, you have to eat. This is coming from the Rebbe who
wasn't
big on eating.
Yeah, it was whatever and whatever. Yeah,
yeah, it wasn't big on eating.
Yeah.
So
my wife had heard of, she got friends with somebody who was involved with making meals for the Rebbe for a short time.
Okay.
During a certain time, and they said that, you know, they'd make a plate and, you know, a food. Yeah. First of all, they weren't large portions. You know, it was a plate full of food.
Yeah.
And they're one bite of the chicken, one bite of the potatoes, and one bite of the and that was it. You know. That's
right. We would accuse our kids of having eating disorders.
Right. You know what the Rebbe, and the first concern was the Rebbe didn't like it. No, he loved it. It was wonderful. You know,
that's it. I'm done.
I'm done. Yeah. And, you know.
Yeah. So
and it's not like he ate three meals a day. You know, it's
right.
It was that meal with his wife at 2, 3, 4, 5 a.m. and that was it.
Right. Exactly.
Incredible.
Okay. That's why he's called a tzaddik, and there's good to him because that's all he has is good.
Yeah.
Okay. That's through removing the filthy garments of his soul, meaning thought, speech, and action, completely.
Mm.
You have in the Haftarah from a couple of weeks ago, you have this general by the name of Yehoshua, not to be confused with Yehoshua ben Nun, this is rather Malachi. Yeah. And he's accosted by an angel. He's a Kohen Gadol, actually. And the angel tells him, remove your filthy garments.
Right.
So what is he referring to? He's moving to his thought, speech, and action.
Right.
Those are the filthy garments. Mm. Now, can a person become a tzaddik?
Apparently.
The Alter Rebbe did write a book. This is called Sefer Shel Beinonim. The Alter Rebbe did write a book called Sefer Shel Tzaddikim. Mm. The book on how to be a tzaddik. But it was lost in a fire.
Yeah.
Never to be...
Can't imagine why.
Never to be replaced.
Yeah.
So... From what I can see, I don't think that a person is able to attain the level of tzaddik per se. It's like really, really, really tough.
I think it appears as though it can be that you can attain a place and Hashem will provide it for you. But those are about,
you need a lot of help.
75 trillion to 1.
Yeah, you need is a lot of help. He talks about it at the end of chapter 14.
Yeah.
That it is possible,
right?
But it's really rare. Tzaddikim, for the most part,
are born
that way.
Right.
Okay. So, and Hashem has decided, well, this person is going to be a tzaddik, because a tzaddik, well, at that point, once a person has no yetzer hara, they really have no free will.
Right.
Because yetzer hara means I have no desire to do anything wrong. What does that mean? That the only thing that they can do
is what's right.
Is the right thing.
Right. They're almost, I don't want to say they're a robot, but they're
They're very close to being robotic.
Pretty close.
Where's your reward?
Pardon?
Where's your reward?
It's not a question of reward.
They're not doing it for the reward.
It's a question of just doing.
Well, I know.
Doing it for the sake of doing.
If you don't have the...
They don't have the choice. It's not doing it for the reward either.
There's nothing to test you or do anything to.
It's not even for that sake either.
It says that Mashiach is going to come, va'asit tzadikai le'tiyuvta, and he's going to make the tzadikim do tshuva. And so the very simple, there's lots of different long out, drawn out answers. But the simple lever is that they could have done more. Not that they did wrong. They could have done more.
Yeah.
But you have an Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu willingly gave up his freedom of choice. He didn't have any say in the matter as if he was going to do anything right or wrong. He just didn't. But very often it is that when the Hashem will protect the righteous so that nothing happens to them.
Right.
There is a story with Menachem Nachum of Chernobyl. I think we said this one in chapter 8. That he asked for a glass of milk. My breakfast. You ever heard this story?
Yeah.
And somebody brought him a glass of milk. A little while later, he said, "Did anybody bring me the? Could somebody bring me a glass of milk already?" And they said, "It's right in front of you." And he said, "I don't see it." And he says, "It's right in front of you." And he said, Where? I don't see it. So somebody came in and said, wait, don't drink the milk. They started the milking before the Jew got there to watch it.
Right.
So that makes, that invalidates the whole milk process because it's called halavaka.
Right.
Okay. So he says now, there's not, there's technically in halacha, there's nothing, it's not called halavakam. What it's called is chalav shaloi roye Yisrael. Milk that was not seen by a Jew. That's what it's called.